Let's get at it. So this instruction is on structure. And if you can remember our pathway as it relates to preparation, remember this first leg is exegesis, and one of the, or the first tool on your worksheet is the tool of structure. Now, there's a movie that's really popular in the States right now called Jurassic Park, or Jurassic World, or whatever the latest installation is. And basically, it's a group of dinosaur people. Let's just But paleontologists make their living by analyzing bones. They're able, in real life, paleontologists are able to produce renderings of now extinct creatures because they can tell how those animals function just by paying close attention to how they were physically structured. Predators, for example, are structured to hunt, and so their eyes tend to be forward focused. There's another TV show. We got too many TV shows in the States. There's a particular one called CSI. And there's CSI Miami, Las Vegas, Des Moines. Oh, they got CSI everywhere. And basically, what these people do is they're able, not with dinosaur bones, but with human bones, to determine the height, the gender, and very often the cause of death from somebody just by analyzing how things are structured. Recently I had, not recently, probably about 2 years ago now, I had to have an MRI done on my shoulder because of some activity I had done. And so what they did is they looked not just at the bones, but they looked at the attendant structures, the tendons, to see if there was something out of joint, out of place. And they did a 360 view, not just to see how things were laid out, but how they were working together. So when we come to a text and we're dealing with this issue of structure, literally what we're trying to be is biblical paleontologists. We're not CSI, BSI, Bible Structure Investigators. We're spirit-guided MRI operators. And what we're trying to do is take a look at these bones to see how they are put together. And since I don't get paid unless I draw something, listen, this is the best I can do, all right? This is this is the picture for structure. We need to look with x-ray eyes, with MRI vision at a text, because here's the principle. If we need to state the principle, we must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. Okay? That's the picture, that's the principle. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. We must find the organizing principle of the author and let it dictate the shape and emphasis of our talk. We got to get the bones right in order for the body of our message to be healthy, because we're teaching the emphasis that the author, the Holy Spirit, put into the text, and only then can we see the life or emphasis of the passage. We're looking at the text with x-ray eyes to see exactly how is this text organized. Now, the question we're trying to get at with structure is, how is this text organized? And when I say that, I'm not just talking about identifying the elements. We're not just doing some type of, back when I was in school, sometimes we had to do in our grammar classes, we had to diagram the sentence to see, okay, what's the subject, what's the verb, and how is this laid out, and so on and so forth. We're not just trying to identify the parts, but how are the pieces fitting together? What I mean by that is, if I can, with my old man thumbs, get some things out of the way here. Let's see here. Let's try it this way. One more time. Okay, that's fine. It's not gonna work. I'll do it this way. What we're looking for is how do the pieces fit together? Not just what are the pieces, that I see this, I see that, but how are they fitting together? What's the relationship between the parts that we see that are distinct from one another, but obviously they relate to one another? So, for example, we just did Psalm 20, verse 4, right? Or we did Psalm 20. We were looking at verse 4 and we were trying to get some things, but what did you do? You looked and read the whole psalm, and by reading the whole psalm, you started seeing some structural things that sort of led you to the emphasis of salvation for the king. What were some of the things that we saw? Well, we saw the word save, saving, or salvation repeated several times. We saw some transitions as it relates to the voice that was used, may you, and it talked about but us and we. And then we saw how the text actually landed, and that is in that last verse, verse 9, it talked about the Lord saving the king. And so then that gave us, just by looking at those structural cues and clues, that is repeated words and phrases, the change in voice from you into him and all those types of things, and then exactly where the psalm landed, that gave us a very significant confidence that this text, in terms of emphasis, is about salvation of the king. All right? You already practiced that. So just remember that the point of structure is to discern the emphasis. Now, I've already laid out a few, but what are some of the strategies that we use in order to discern structure just in general? And then we'll talk about the book of Ecclesiastes. If we're just talking about discerning structure, what are some of the things, the tools, the strategies that we use to discern structure? So if we're dealing with a narrative, we're going to deal with plot arc. If we're dealing with a story, talking about plot arc. What else? Depending on the genre, what different types of tools we... So if we're dealing with poetry, what are we going to deal with? Say it again. Imagery, parallelism, stanzas. Any other types of strategies? I'm talking about strategies. What are some of the things that we can do that will help us to discover how this is organized? Repeated words. Conjunctions. Sometimes conjunctions. So that speaks to the grammar, basically. Because sometimes there might be a because or in order, there might be some kind of purpose clause that you might see in there. What are the strategies? If you're at your desk on Monday morning, you know Sunday's coming. There's only 2 days in the week for a preacher, Monday and Saturday. Okay, it's Monday. You know Sunday is coming. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when you sit down in order to discern what the structure is? You might recognize, okay, it's a narrative, so I'm going to do this. It might be poetry, I'm going to do that. What are some other just general strategies that you're going to use? Okay, so you're looking for a logical flow, and one of the strategies you use is just to print it out. Print it out so you can get a very clean and clear visual without the without the verses sort of impeding you, because sometimes the editors of various translations have their view of what the structure is that might not necessarily be the most helpful. So we use various strategies, and I just wanted to say the main one, and you're sort of getting at it, is you gotta read. Let's start with that, just for drill, just for kicks. How about read, reread, and then read again? Because very often it's our very familiarity with the text that blinds us to certain things that are very obvious in the text. As we read, reread, as we read it in different translations, because again, sometimes your favorite translation has some blocks, or they might have stanzas laid out in ways that might not be necessarily helpful. So we're going to read, we're going to reread, we're going to read it out loud, we're going to print it out, we're going to do all these various things so that we get out of the rut of thinking that we already know what it's saying, as opposed to letting the text talk to us afresh. We're looking for repeated words, phrases, ideas. Sometimes there's a question and answer format. We see this in various genres, but we'll see it sometimes here in Ecclesiastes, where there's a question and then there's an observation or an answer to the question and then there's a conclusion. Let me just say this just in passing, and then we're going to try to get into Ecclesiastes, and that is this. Every book has its own, and Mervyn is going to talk about this when we get to melodic line. Every book has its own cadence, its own sort of rhythm, its own sort of, every author has his own sort of, for lack of a better word, patterns that he tends to fall into. And here's one of these strategies for getting at structure. As you read the whole book, this is what the brother was getting at in terms of printing things out. As you read the whole book, you start getting a sort of feel for this particular author's rhythm and his cadence. This is very true in Ecclesiastes, because once you start recognizing how he starts dealing with maybe a proverb and then observations and then conclusions, or maybe he might give a scenario and then bottom line the thing, and this is what you need to learn from this, you start picking up on, okay, I'm starting to see kind of a pattern of how this author likes to write or likes to organize his material. So be mindful of that, and I'm not saying this facetiously, you cannot beat reading the Bible. And you cannot beat, if you're trying to discern structure, reading the whole book and then reading again and then allowing the Holy Spirit. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later. Did you know that the Holy Spirit, that this is the only book that you can read that when you sit down and read it, the author will sit down with you? And he will give you insight if you'll just take the time. Brothers, do you know that we're workmen? And workmen got to put work in. And the work is to sit and tremble before the Word of God and let the Holy Spirit help you to see how he organized this material. Well, in Ecclesiastes, that's exceedingly hard. Let me just say this. In Ecclesiastes, it's exceedingly hard. So if you were struggling with your worksheet, welcome to the union. Welcome to the brotherhood. And just to be honest with you, after today's instructions, if you feel like going back and changing everything, again, welcome. You're in the right place, and you're feeling exactly what you should feel. But Ecclesiastes, let's be honest, Ecclesiastes is not Ephesians, right? This is wisdom literature, and we should expect this literature to be a little bit less, a little bit less straightforward, a little bit more challenging, and a little bit more frustrating, and therefore a little more interesting. If you can get a grasp on it, Ecclesiastes will really help your preaching just in general, so that you'll get out of a rut. So let's see if we can't just practice right quick with some of these tools. That is, we're paying attention to repetition, we're paying attention to grammar. Our goal is just to see how is the literature organized, not just to identify the breaks. Can I say this again? When we talk about structure, we're not just saying, okay, I see a break at verse 4, I see another break at verse 7, I see another break. Okay, that's great, but how do they relate to one another? And toward what end is the author driving? Let's practice with one. If you turn in your Bible to Proverbs, let's start with a proverb. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1 through 9. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1 through 9. I'm going to have someone read it out loud. And then you with your mate, you with the people that you're sitting next to or near, I want you to discern what you perceive to be the structure is and tell me what tools you used and therefore what the emphasis is. We're looking at Proverbs 4, 1 through 9. Who'll stand and read it with your chest? There you go. Ah, excellent reading. Thank you so much. So with your mate, with the people, the person that you're sitting next to or near, I want you to answer three questions. First of all, what is the structure? When I say what is the structure, I'm saying how is this organized? Okay, come on, Pen. What is the structure? What tools did you use to discern that? And what is this about? When we say emphasis, we're not looking for a summary statement. We're not looking for you to put everything you see and sort of try to boil it down into a sentence. What we're asking when we say, okay, I see the structure, and this structure is emphasizing that this is what this text is about. This is the reality that we're trying to highlight. This is the subject matter that we're dealing with. So I want you to take just a few moments. We've read it. What's the structure? How did you discern that structure? What tools did you use? And therefore, what are you seeing as the emphasis? What is this really about? Let's take about 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, and work on that right quick. Let's take one more minute. One more minute and we'll come together. Okay. Let's come back together. And what did you get for number one? How is this author, in the simplest terms, how has he organized this particular passage in terms of the breaks or however you want to look at it? Let's start over here. Somebody, what did you give with your group? Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, structurally with Peter Kim, and so he's mapping that out. So these, just saw those two.
Okay, so you see two different things going on. Anybody else getting anything differently in terms of where you saw the breaks? Yes, sir.
Get wisdom, verse 5. Get wisdom, verse 7.
Okay, so you paid attention to the imperatives and the repetition. Somebody over on this side. Yes, sir. So you were trying to pay attention to the themes that were being addressed and how they related to one another. So we got, three various structures so far. Can we get a fourth one? What are you? Yes, sir.
About 1 to 4 and then 5 to 9.
And why did you do that?
So 1 to 4 is all these teaching, instruction, precepts,
ratio. Okay. So I saw one more hand, and then let's see if we can't come to some consensus. Yes, sir. Okay, so you said 4B starts the quotation. So this is very interesting that we have, I didn't keep count, 4 or 5 different ways that we could look at it. So this is very helpful, and I'm glad this is as messy as it is in this sense. In this sense. Because it points out something to us. Number one, that this is not easy. But then number two, what we're looking for is the cleanest and clearest organizational framework. Not framework in terms of what we were talking about last session, but exactly what's going on here. If we step back, we see in verses 1 through 4a, a voice. But then starting with verse 4b through the rest of it, 4:9, we see the quotation, and it's just this juxtaposition between what a father is saying and what that father has received from the grandfather that is going to help us as relates to the emphasis, because if we only look at, and here's the lesson that you have just taught by these 4 or 5 different sort of views as it relates to structure, and that is this: don't rely just on one tool. Pull all of your tools out. We talk about Batman, when he's fighting somebody, I mean, he uses everything on his utility belt. When you're dealing with structure, particularly in a book like Ecclesiastes, you cannot just go with the strategy or the structural tool that you love the best. Like if you always use, I'm looking for the imperatives. Well, that doesn't really help you really discern much as relates to emphasis here, because the imperative is get wisdom, which is the whole book. That's the emphasis of the whole book. So what have you really gained unless you pull out another tool? And the most significant tool here is the voice. Who is speaking? And who is speaking to who? So we see these two big breaks, that is, in verse 1 through 4a. He says, hear, O sons, so on and so forth. And then starting with 4b, he says, this is what was taught me by your grandfather or by my father. And then he lays out all these types of things. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this is a perfect example, not only of just that you cannot just use one tool, use all the tools. When I say use all the tools, I'm saying do everything that you all did. Some focused on the repetition. Some folk, I believe the original brother might have focused on the, or over here, focused on the voice that was used, who's speaking to who. You might focus on the grammar as relates to what end something is being said or for what purpose something is being said. But all of that is great, but it's not good enough until you figure out, okay, but how do these fit together? Okay, so in verses 1 through 4a, we have the father speaking to a son. In verses 4b through the rest of it, we have what that father had received from his father. And so it's not just wisdom that is the focus, even though get wisdom is clearly repeated. It's this passing on of wisdom. It's this generational wisdom that seems to be the emphasis. Because if you just say, well, the emphasis here is get wisdom, you could go anywhere in the book of Proverbs and in the book of Ecclesiastes and almost say the same thing. But what he seems to be addressing here is this. We very often talk about generational wealth, but we don't talk enough about generational wisdom, the passing on of what. And now, obviously, there's more to be said about that, and there's questions to be asked and answered, but all we're after right now with structure, we must discern the structure in order to discover the what? Emphasis. Emphasis is not all that you're going to say about the text. Emphasis is what is the text in general? What's the general reality that this text is addressing? And then we have to fill in the blanks as it relates to, okay, but what is said about generational? Why did he say this? All those types of things. Do you see the differentiation I'm making right here? Emphasis is one thing. It's not everything. It's what the structure has revealed to be the heart of the matter, the focus that your attention should be drawn to. And then it's our task as we identify the various elements to figure out how they fit together. Yes, get wisdom. Yes, what was the other imperative? Get insight. Don't forsake her, and all these types of things. But you got to fit in this piece. Okay, but my father told me, now I'm telling you as my son. Does everybody get that? We're going to practice another one. Let's go back to one we've already practiced right quick. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. And let's look back at what we had already practiced. We did in the previous session, 9 through 12. Let's look at 7 through 16. You're already familiar with this. Well, what I want to look at is specifically how these pieces are fitting together. I want you to, we've already practiced a little bit with it. Oh, sorry about that. We've already practiced a little bit with it because, let me just sort of, for the sake of time, we've looked at 7 through 8, 9 through 12, 13 through 16. Those are the sort of breaks that we've already sort of discerned, already read, already looked at. But my question for you today is, how do these puzzle pieces fit together to give you the emphasis? Now, if you were paying attention, Mervyn already gave you sort of an emphasis in the last section. But I think you've forgotten too. So that's why we're going to go over it again to see how do you get to the emphasis. What are these, what is the organizing principle? What is the overarching thing, the common thing that these various parts are relating to, and how are they fitting together to get to an emphasis? Now you can look back at your notes and framework, but then you can read right here. We've read it. Look at it again with your mate. Let's just take about 3 minutes. And here's what I'm asking. What is the emphasis, but how did you get to that as relates to how these three parts relate to one another? How do these three parts relate to one another in order to get you the emphasis? We already got the breaks. We ain't talking about that. We have that as a given. How are they relating together to get to your emphasis? Take about 3 minutes, right quick. All right. Let's see what we have. I gave you the breaks, because listen carefully. When we talk about structure, it's not just about, okay, I see a break here at verse 12, I see a break here. That's great, but that's not what we mean by structure. What we mean is, okay, how is it organized, and how do these pieces fit together to draw you towards some type of focus or some type of emphasis. So what did you, let's start over on this side. Yes, sir.
So were you sort of trying to...
Okay, so the emphasis, so you looked at the commonalities and the contrasts between the sections. So let me pause here just for a second, because you're pointing out something that I want us to pay attention as we go through the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes. That very often he likes to use juxtaposition or contrast or comparison to make a point. And in this particular, and this is why I chose this pericope, particularly in light of what Mervyn had already shared with us, because you see sort of three different types of things that he's doing here that he does very frequently. That is to say, he has a scenario, I have seen, and then he has a principle or a proverb, two are better than one, and then he has a better than statement. Well, it's better to do this than to do that. That's Ecclesiastes. That's kind of the cadence. He doesn't always do all three in the same sort of pericope, but you're going to see him say a lot, well, I have seen, and then he'll, it's something he observed, and then he'll come to a conclusion. Or he'll give a proverb and then sort of play it out. Or he'll give these better than statements. And this one has all three. But the way you got to the emphasis was seeing the comparison or contrast between the various sections. I see another hand over here. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, so,
yeah. Yes, sir. And what's your name?
George.
Give George one clap.
That's
just one. Is more impactful. One good one is better than a whole bunch of weak ones. Exactly right. So you start to see, and so what did he do? He was not just paying attention to what was going on in each section, but how is it relating? And it's almost seeming that the outer sections, that is the observation as well as the better than statement, is driving toward the proverb in the middle, which you got to the same conclusion, but it's by using all these different tools, because both of you are saying it's just better together, right? Did I see another hand over here? Did you use something, some other tools or get some other insight? I thought I saw a hand over here, or maybe I just saw a question mark over somebody's head. But here's the point, because I want to practice one more, and that is this. We're not, when we talk about structure, again, this is Monday morning. I know Sunday's coming. If I can get structure, if I can get toward an emphasis, if I can figure out, okay, if I can discern what is this about, then, man, I'm well on my way on the pathway. I'm well on my way. And if I can get clean and clear here, I'm well on the right pathway that's going to get me safely home. What I'm looking for is the emphasis. What I'm looking for is not just labeling what each section is, but recognizing how do they relate to one another to give me a picture of what the author was actually driving toward. Does that make sense? Okay, then let's practice one, and then we'll see. And that's why I keep putting this puzzle up. Let me just say something, one other thing, because we saw it here. Sometimes it's comparison and contrast. Sometimes there might be a proverb that is just being expounded upon. Sometimes it's scenarios that if you pay attention to what he's saying, he's observing, then you'll recognize, okay, all of these things that he's observing have these sort of elements in common, and therefore that's what's driving me toward my emphasis. Let's practice one more, and then we'll take questions. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 6. Let's look at verses 1 through 12. This was a little bit extended. 6, 1 through 12. There are drawbacks and benefits to working through a smaller book like this. One of the benefits is that in your small groups and in the worksheets, basically you will have touched like every section of the book, And because we try to get examples that you're not working on, there's only a few examples that we can use. And if you pay attention to the examples, then basically you got the whole book. If you really are doing your work and then paying attention to what we're doing in these instructions, you really got a handle on most of the book, because we're filling in the gaps by using examples that you have not worked on. So look at Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 1 through 12. Let me read it for you, and then I want you to, again, I want you to discern the structure. That is, how has the author organized this? I want you to be able to articulate what tools you used, and I want you to come up with a provisional emphasis. When I say tools, I always put an S there, because I'm asking you in your work, and this is not just for Ecclesiastes, this is all of your work. I'm asking you to pull out all of the tools all the time. That doesn't mean that every tool is going to give you traction, but it does keep you from falling in love with the tool that you love the best. And then seeing that usually in settings like this, I haven't encountered it thus far, so please do not raise your hand if this is you. But usually in settings like this, there's always a chiasm guy who sees chiasm in everything. Well, I'm not saying that chiasm is not useful, but it doesn't just, I mean, just change it up every now and then. Try to use a different tool and see if you get traction. Why? Because when you use different tools and you get sort of on the same track, that gives you greater confidence that I'm on the right track. But if you use one tool, that is to say, you look at the repetition or the grammar, but then you look at the comparison and contrast, and you come up with two separate things, well, that means you got to keep doing some work. You're not on track yet. So that's why we prescribe that. See what we're doing? I'm going to read, and then I'm going to ask you to do your work. We'll give you about 4 minutes to get this done. Everybody got it? Ecclesiastes chapter 6. There's an evil I have seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It's a grievous evil. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he also has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. For it comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all these go to the one place? All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage has the wise man over the fool, and what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is, and that he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. The more words, the more vanity. And what is the advantage to man? For who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? All right? Have at it. Have at it, mates. Okay, let's work on it together. And then we'll take a moment for questions. What do we have here in terms of structure? How is he organized? How has he organized this particular pericope? Let's start over here. He said, I gave you 2 minutes for 4 months worth of work. That's exactly right. But by the grace of God and by your partner's acuity, what did you come up with? You say it again?
Just verse 1 and 2.
What about it?
Put them together.
Okay.
He says, I've seen something evil, and then he tells me what it is.
All right. Okay, so you're so you're focusing on the grammar. Yes, sir.
We haven't.
Okay, so the and how did you come to that? So under satisfaction and satisfaction, yes. Okay, so you're going to see a whole lot of unsatisfaction. You, for the sake of time, in 10 to 12, but the comparison and contrast, the juxtaposition of these sort of unsatisfactory pursuits, whether it be good things, whether it be the fact that man's appetite in the center there, verses 7 through 9, is never satisfied, and the fact that trying to search out all of the enigmas of life, you can't figure it out. You won't be satisfied even trying to figure that out. The idea is that each of these sections, and the way that we came to these sections, that is to section them off, and then to try to figure out, okay, how they relate to one another, is the focus in each section. So one was as relates to possessions or to wealth and possessions and honor and all those types of things. In that center section, verses 7 through 9, he talks about man's appetite is never satisfied. And then he talks about even trying to find the answers to life will never satisfy you because you can't figure it out. Unsatisfaction seems to be the emphasis, okay? So again, whether you use grammar, whether you use the repetition of words, whether you paid attention to what's happening in each different section, the emphasis is what we're trying to get at, and it's this idea of satisfaction. You had your hand up.
Yes.
Two separate examples based on who is the subject of those examples. Or who is the, say it a different way, who's the object? Who's not satisfied?
A man.
Okay? So, yes, there's two different examples of how man might not be satisfied, but that's still different than 7 through 9, which is sort of summarizing things that a man's appetite is never going to be satisfied. And then it goes to a different topic as it relates to life's enigmas in verses 10 through 12. So that's why we did it, and this brings up a very important point as it relates to using all of your tools. Yes, it's true, there's two separate examples, but what we're trying to do is not divide text. We're just trying to discern what is the biggest structures that are put in place and how those big structures are relating to one another. You see what I'm saying? Because you could dice it up, and perhaps even in your sermon, you might want to point out, okay, there's two examples of a man who won't be satisfied by possessions, who won't be satisfied by this. But as it relates to structure, why are we trying to discern structure? We must discover the structure so that we can get the emphasis. We're not discerning the structure so we can get our outline or our argument. We're trying to get the emphasis. And then we still have work to do on our pathway home, where we'll be able to unpack all the rest of it.